Stable chat today here in absolutely sensational downtown Pipers Creek. Charles Kasser, hello, mate.
G'day, Paul. How you going, mate?
Very, very good. What a beautiful day.
It's gorgeous, mate. This is what it's like in Kyneton in winter.
That's the greatest lie ever. Anyone watching this? But this is one out of the box, and it's a beautiful little property you've got here in Pipers Creek, which is, what, 20 minutes out of Kyneton or 10 minutes out of Kyneton?
Yeah, it's about 15 minutes out of Kyneton, mate.
You train horses. You've got quite a few horses here.
Yeah, we train, it varies for us, between sort of 10 and 20 horses on the property. They're predominantly trained on the property, but we do go into Kyneton and use the track for fast work for our main gallops.
And you've got the truck there and the horse float there. How many horses do you work? Like, how many horses does Kasser Racing at a time, do you have him work?
Yeah, at the minute we've got 10 horses in work, but we have been, you know, like sort of spring and summer, we do get up to about 20 horses in work. It's easier to get through the numbers at that point in time. As I think everybody associated with the industry understands, at the minute staff, there's a bit staff shortage, but sort of in summer you can get through them, you know, a bit easier because you've got daylight earlier. And it's easier to motivate yourself to work an extra couple of horses.
It's easier to get out of bed. It's a family business here too, though. Like, it's all pretty much all hands on deck to a degree. Your daughter helps out. Your wife definitely help out. Which you say there before about staff, it does make it easy when the whole family's involved.
Yeah, definitely. Harmony, my 19-year-old daughter, she works here full-time. She wants to make this her career path. And the rest of the family, whilst they all have other forms of employment, they're really good. They, you know, if we're at the races and horses need to be fed up, they've grown up around horses, they'll feed up and do that sort of stuff. And it does make it a lot easier, you know, when it's a family business. But, you know, obviously it does restrict the size that you get to, but we like being boutique and having, you know, 10 to 20 horses. I'm pretty hands-on. I don't think I could train 100 horses.
No, we're just talking about it. Both of us don't mind a chat. We can talk for a long time. We've been talking for a while before we've even started this interview. You said there Harmony wants to make this a career, training-wise or riding-wise. What does Harmony want to do?
Yeah, no, definitely training-wise. She's got that sort of mind, you know, like even from a young age, if a horse went below expectations, she'd be in the car driving home. Dad, do you think it was this? Or Dad, do you think it was that? Should we try this? You know, so she certainly thinks like a budding trainer. Yeah,
that's great, because I do these with standard bred trainers, thoroughbred trainers. It doesn't matter who they are. Staff are an issue, and the growth of the sport can only happen from the youth. So, I mean, to hear someone in your family, like a lot of families that I go to, their kids aren't doing it. They're becoming accountants or other jobs because they see how hard mum and dad work. So that's really exciting. You should be pretty proud of that.
Yeah, I am. Like, we never directed them into that. The only thing with the kids were when they wanted a part-time job, we tried to steer them into, come and muck out some boxes and we'll give you some cash, because we didn't want to have to drive them to the local Chinese shop to make $8 an hour, because then we had to pick them up, and whilst they were making $16, it was costing us that in fuel. So we sort of we headed them down this way, and all of them love the animal, and some of them have chosen other career paths. But Harmony actually didn't just fall in love with the animal, she fell in love with the sport, you know.
That's great, and that's exciting, and hopefully other people, you know, might see this interview and capture onto it, because I think that is key to get these young 16 through to 18-year-olds. You know, everyone wants to race ride, everyone wants to become the next Damien Oliver or whatever, but we need, you know, people coming along through all facets of the industry, which, you know, that's my thoughts, and I think it's the only way we can grow the sport.
Yeah, I think the challenge to both the equine codes, you know, harness racing and thoroughbred racing, I think the challenge is that we have to make it an attractive transition for young kids who grow up with their ponies, and whether they go to pony club or whether they just, you know, ride in a group or ride at home. We need them to transfer or grow that love of the horse or the animal into the love of the sport as well. And I think we need to put our thinking caps on and try and work out, how do we do that? You know, how do we do that? We, you know, it's okay to go look at this jockey, and everyone knows the jockey profile, but, you know, if the kid weighs 70 kilos and is 6'2", then we probably can't be heading down that path. We need to probably introduce them to all the other people behind the industry, because don't kid yourself, you know, whenever the biggest trainers win a race, it's a team that's done it. You know, there's someone there every morning putting the saddle on, someone booting it up or bandaging it. There's someone doing a box, and it takes every single person or part of that team to make it successful. So it'd be nice, I think, if we could see more media coverage of those people. Now, I did notice that this weekend in the Thoroughbred game, they gave every winning strapper a TV. You know, and I think that's heading in the right direction. It's starting to head in the right direction. I'd love to turn on, the media stations that cover our sport and your sport, and see them covering, you know, the person on the ground, the person that's handling the horse, and, you know, not always seeing what the trainer has to say and what the jockey has to say. But I think the industry's aware of that. I think obviously if we make the hours of that our industry works more attractive, I think that's going to lead people into it. Nobody wants their, you know, 15-year-old child to be starting at 3 o'clock in the morning. We had this discussion earlier. I think we need to get in line, and I think the way we can do that is if public tracks can stay open a little bit later. I think we'll get, you know, we'd see a greater influx of youth coming into it, because you're asking them to come into an industry where mum and dad have got to drop them off. I don't know too many mum and dads that want to be dropping off their son or their daughter to a racing stable at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, or worse still, they get on a push bike at that hour of the morning, and, you know, the same as our conversation before. Quite often there's people driving home. They might be shift workers, but there might be guys coming home from, you know, the pubs and the nightclubs, and ladies coming home from those sort of things, and bad things can happen. So you don't want the kids on the roads at that hour of the day either, because it's not a good time of the day. Campbell's comments, mate, you pretty much summed it up for me there, because why I started this station is for the love of the industry. I have a 16-year-old girl. She was 15, you know, 14, 15 when I started it, but it was to try and keep her in the industry. And why? And it's for the love of the horse. No mentions of punt or how much money you can earn or any of those things. You said it about three times in that last part where you're talking. Got to get back to the love and why you and I are standing here on a hill, because we love the horses. We didn't get involved in it because we won a heap of money on the punt or what it was. It's actually just the love, the smell, the feel, the reward that horses actually give you.
Yeah, look, I think you touched on something that's really important there, and I have tried to voice this to anybody in administration that had listened. I think we need to separate the punt from the sport.
Absolutely.
Because I can tell you that they need to be two different things. And I say that because a couple of years ago, I sponsored a local soccer team here, and was rapt to do so, you know. My kids played there, and I was happy to do so. And they called me in, and they said, look, you know, I know we've done a sponsorship deal with you. However, unfortunately, we've had a committee meeting, and we can't put CJ Casa Racing Stables on the junior playing tops, you know. And I said, can I ask why? And they said, because it's associated with punting. And yet, when I was, I reckon I was 11 or 12 years old, I got taken on a school excursion to a Flemington stable. Yep. And that's how the mindset has changed. You remember that they used to, on, you know, Channel 9 and Channel 7 and Channel 10, used to replay the last four races, the last 400 metres on their main news channel. We've gone away from that. And we need to, I think, we need to, look, I understand that the punt drives our prize money, but we need to separate the punt a little bit from the sport. They need to be two different things, so that you know, kids can be associated with racing without non-racing families being worried that that leads you into the punt.
One of my biggest bugbears is on that. It's quite funny. This conversation's gone very different to where I thought it was, and I'm happy with it. When, and I'll say racing.com, and I'm definitely not picking on these guys because they are money, the TAB turnover and the likes, but I don't think they're aware of it. When a horse wins a race, the tote odds are bang, they're up there. Most people nowadays watch a race, they have their phone accounts, they have it on their phone, they can actually see what they, instead of showing the joys of these horses and the second and third horses coming across the line, more often than not, there's a tote screen across those second and third. You miss that live feel. We're too busy worrying about initially saying, right, well, if you've had a dollar on this, you're going to collect $2. You know, try and showcase the love. Leave the punting part out of it for 5 minutes. It makes no difference. You can't collect for five. Why does it have to instantly be up there? I find it a bit frustrating, that part.
Yeah, and look, you're starting to see that in AFL football now. You know, your game's about to start. and you've got the kids on the couch and they're going to watch it, and they're telling you, you know, this player is going to have 29 disposals, this guy's going to kick the first goal and we're going to get X. I'm not sure if we need that. I'm not sure if you don't have that, that you're going to get less people punting or the amount that's being punted. I just think that we need to try and hold our the space of us being a sport. I think we need to do that. And I think the main feature days do that, but it'd be nice to see them. The sport hold itself as a sport, not as a punting prospect on the other 364 days of the year. I think they're trying to do that. I think that our industry, and I'm sure your industry, are doing a heap for equine welfare, but I think we need to show that. We need to show that to the world outside of racing. I know for a fact they're doing that. I mean, for the last 10 years, we've rehomed every horse that's been retired, and there's a whole heap of avenues that you can do that, and the rehoming facilities, they get help from RVL and all that. But I think that story needs to be told, and it needs to be told on the main stage, not necessarily on our racing channel, because the people that maybe judge our sport, they're not watching the racing channel. So you need to get it onto that main stage, because unfortunately, sometimes the welfare stories that get told on those stations are the bad ones.
And they miss a point. And you actually said there before, it is a sport. It's also a lifestyle, and I think that's the one thing that we do miss. Like you were saying here before, we're talking about this property and how cool it is. It can be, you know, cold, it can be wet, you can have water wash, you can have lots of things. But you love it, like, because of being able to raise a healthy family, a happy family out here. And they've grown. You've got one daughter that's staying in the industry, but it's been able to, you know, serve a purpose. And that's what horse racing is also. It is a sport and it is a big business, but it is a lifestyle, because you have to feed them twice a day, three times a day, depending on where you are, what you're doing. You've got to get up early, you've got to get home late. It is a lifestyle that involves the whole family. Whether it's only you doing it or everyone in the family actually doing it, it does affect us racing people in a little bit of a different light that I think we need to be able to showcase why we do it. Because you don't do it for the money, you actually do it for the love.
Yeah, I mean, look, there's probably easier ways to make money. But in saying that, you know, like I fell in love with a horse when I was a kid. And then, you know, when I trained my first winner, I've spent the rest of my life trying to replicate that feeling. It's a feeling that, you know, anyone that's ever won a race, whether as an owner, a jockey, even strappers, you know, like I've had young kids that have worked for me and they've strapped the horse from day dot and the horse wins its first race. And it might be at its 15th start at Menangatang, but you know what? I've seen them get teary because their horse has won a race, because to them, that's their horse. You know, they might not be paying the bill, but because they do all the work, it's their horse. And I love that. I think that's what it's all about.
I couldn't agree more. And I think, again, that's what they forget. People actually forget about that. I don't want to hold you too long, but here, Charles, you've got good stabling. You've got stabling for how many did you say, about 20?
Yeah, we can cater for about 22 horses here. We've got a variety, and I've got walk-in, walk-out boxes where they've got a small paddock, and we've got a couple of different arrangements. We've got a barn and some English stables, and just gives us a bit of a variety to be able to cater for the individual horse.
You've got a square round yard. It was one of the first things you actually put in there, but which might sound strange, but you do enjoy that with a heavy sand to be able to break it up. You've got a walker, a good size walker, and a treadmill. And we were saying there before, the treadmill's not out of necessity. It's something that you actually like to use as a training aid.
I do. Look, you know, I love doing different things with my horses, and I love not having a rider on their back every day. So we try and mix it up. You know, if they go to the track on a Tuesday and have a good strong gallop, then on a Wednesday, they're just going to have a little trot on the treadmill. Nobody getting on their mouth, nobody on their back. And you can really have a look at their action. We've got the one with the Perspex on the side, so you can really pick any fault with it. You know, then the following day, we might lead one on the little track with the off the pony. We do have quite a big round yard. You know, it's 15 metres by... I think 18 metres, and it's in heavy sand, and we've been doing that for 20 years. I know now the working horses in heavy sand is the fashion, but you know, we've had that for a long time, and it does make them work, and we put the gear on them and just get their head into the right collection and then work them through the heavy sand. It's using different muscles, and it does work their cardiovascular system, you know.
Have you been here for 20 years?
I've been here, yeah, I think 18 years, yeah. So I
wow. Wow. I've known this gentleman for a little while. It's actually good. Horses, some people like the old tried horses. Some people like the young horses. You're not scared to try any. In fact, I would nearly say you make most of the horses you race.
Yeah, look, it's interesting because I had that conversation with Harmony. She was asking me, what does an owner look for? Would they rather, is it easier to fill a tried horse that you've bought off another stable that maybe is not having a lot of luck, or a yearling? And I said, it's just depending on the individual owner. I think the person that dreams of the, you know, Group 1 glory or a really good horse is going to head down the path of a yearling, because they, you know, you would assume that it's pretty hard to find a tried horse that's going to go all that way. But I've had a lot of fun with tried horses. Usually you're racing within one preparation. They've already had a handful of starts, or they might have had 20 starts, and you know, we've won 4 or 5 races and had a lot of fun like that.
So it doesn't worry you, and you enjoy both. So are you always open for more people, like more owners and more people to get involved with you?
Yeah, absolutely. We're always open to owners joining a team. If anyone doesn't know how to get into racing and thinks, oh, geez, you know, we've got people here that have got 2% in a horse, and they love it. You know, they love it because they come down the track and watch it work, and we've got other people, obviously, that own a horse outright. So, we buy yearlings every year. And then we offer them for, you know, you take as big or a little share as you want. We also buy a range of yearlings. So we'll buy something that we think, geez, it's a nice type, but it's a little bit small. It's got a reasonable page, but it's not going to make a lot of money. You get it home and your working class person can afford to buy a share for not a lot of money. And then we'll try and buy a couple that are, you know, not at the top end. We don't have clients that can buy horses at the top end. But, you know, we spent 70 on one, 40 on one, but then we bought a couple of 5. So, and look, you know, in some years, the horse we've bought for 5 has won 7 races, and the horse we've paid 74 hasn't had a lot of luck. But we also try and, we don't go out and try to buy a tried horse, but occasionally you'll see a horse at the races, you may have raced against it, and then, you know, 2 months later, you'll see it on one of the online auctions and it's being sold, and you'll think, I remember that day. I thought that horse, if it didn't hang on the turn, it might have done this or it might have done that. So I buy them as a bit of a challenge. I try and not buy a tried horse that's in a lot of good form, because you're buying the form. I try and buy something that looked like it could gallop and maybe lost its way. Some horses, you know, get sick of metropolitan stable life and enjoy being out here in a country facility.
Why wouldn't you? Beautiful weather like this, but we will tease. Not always like this in winter time, but summertime it is. It's a beautiful part of the world here, Pipers Creek. It's how far from Melbourne? You're not that far from Melbourne, do you?
I think we're about 70 k's, so it's not far. Look, 50 minutes, we're at the valley.
Yeah, no, beautiful, beautiful part of the world. Charles, thank you. I don't think this will be the last one we do of these, mate. I do enjoy a chat with you, and we'll have some random ones. I really like your insight into there before about the racing and maybe making some people sit up and think, because you are a very passionate soccer person, and you know, I think, you know, some people might turn around and say, oh, well, that's their loss, not taking his sponsorship, but it's a little bit more than that. It's a way the mentality goes. So I really appreciate your insight, mate, and thank you very much for joining me on Stable Chat.
No problem, Paul. Thanks for having me on. And look, for clarity, I didn't withdraw the sponsorship. They put me on the senior shirts. And they didn't on the juniors. And I didn't have a problem with them saying that. It highlighted a concern of how the mainstream everyday Joe Blow sees racing, and you don't want them seeing it as punt, because that's where they think the welfare issue gets pushed to the background if we're only thinking about the punt. And you and I know the horse always comes first.
Thank you very much. We could keep going forever. We might sit down again one day. I've got a bit of little things sticking through my brain. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Paul.